never wanted to be in a fancy metropolitan broadcast facility where the most thought-provoking thing within view is an occasional four-car pileup on the freeway below. We like being miles from nowhere, in the middle of a vineyard that cannot be seen from the little two-lane road on the other side of that rise. Our barn has awesome acoustics and was built with hand tools over 100 years ago. Nonetheless, we've got some really state-of-the-art broadcast technology inside. And our wine cellar, once a root cellar that is absolutely packed with wine we've collected or been given by friends. Welcome. You have just set foot on Grape Encounters radio property, where we don't believe in no trespassing signs. But let's make this our little secret. Oh, and that wine is protected by the sweetest-looking golden retriever who dated a Doberman for a while, so don't get any ideas.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow.
Yep, and it is time for your weekly Grape Encounter, and today I am so pleased to return to a town that I haven't been to in quite a while. In fact, I never get to come here to this particular town and spend very much time because it seems like I'm just coming here, I do a quick interview, and then I take off. But this time, I'm actually spending a couple of days here. The town is one of the most iconic towns in America. It is the town of Carmel by the Sea. Anyway, I wanted to catch up with a winemaker who, in the 6 years that I've been doing Grape Encounters Radio, was one of the most delightful people that I ever talked to, who also has an amazing story, but also his wife has an amazing story because they have his and her wine tasting rooms and wineries, except that she does what she does for a very different cause. And so I'm going to welcome, first of all, Jack Galante. We like to say Gallante.
No, it's Galante.
Jack Gallante. And your wife couldn't make it, Dawn.
No, she is feeling a little ill and under the weather today. She doesn't have a voice, so to speak.
So she's Dawn of the Dead.
So right now, I guess, yes.
But standing in, this is her understudy.
You might say so, yes.
Understudy.
I'll take that.
Megan Cohn, right?
Megan Cohn, yes. She trusts me for some reason to run this business, and I love doing it.
She does. So you are the manager here, an event coordinator. We're going to get into whatever the events are. I don't know of any situation like this where there's a his and hers winery or his and hers tasting room.
Nothing comes to mind right now. I'm sure there are. And of course, there's a lot of folks who both husband and wife are winemakers. There's quite a few we know of. I don't know in full-on wineries if there are his and hers. There may be, but I'm not aware of them.
So was she always involved in the winemaking process for the many years that you've been doing this?
She's always been our CFO for our companies, yes, for many, many years. Dawn has been in charge. She doesn't let me touch the money at all.
Does she stomp the grapes?
She stomps me once in a while.
But anyway, at some point, she decided to live out a dream. So there's the Galante Vineyards and Winery, and then this is called Dawn's Dream.
That's correct. Exactly.
And Megan, I'm going to let you jump into that and explain why it's called Dawn's Dream. And her dream wasn't to stomp out Jack, right?
No, it's just a daily thing. But no. Okay.
Do you see the competition between the two of them?
Healthy, but yes.
Healthy competition.
And I'm on Dawn's side.
Does she sometimes tell her husband that you don't know Jack about wine?
Oh, I've heard that a couple times.
Okay, yeah, that's been out there. Okay, so talk about Dawn's dream for a second.
A lot of people think that the dream was wine, but her passion for wine matches her passion for women and children and nonprofits. And her ultimate goal was to start a business that not only could benefit, you know, the Galante family, but also women and children locally and globally. So she gives about 15% of her proceeds back to nonprofits, focusing on women and children.
And there aren't a lot of proceeds in wine, by the way.
No. It's a very expensive hobby.
Yeah. Wine is not something that too many people get rich in.
No, but we're certainly aspiring to that. And I think the break-even is in about 100 years, we'll be okay.
Well, you're looking good, Jack. So you just keep hanging in there. And you're a real honest to goodness cowboy. This is, I think, where the story really begins with you, because you grew up in these parts.
Yes.
And your great grandfather was very significant to the town of Carmel. Dare I say, more significant than Clint?
In a different way.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I don't know if Clint would have come here if it wasn't for my great grandfather, because my great grandfather founded the town of Carmel, James Frank Devendorf.
And how did he end up coming here, and how do you found a town?
Well, he was a land developer, and in the turn of the century, he was in the area. I believe at the time he was visiting his mother, who had remarried, and his stepfather was Captain Aram, who was stationed here. And Captain Aram, who also was the first signer of the California Constitution. And so he was here with my grandmother at the time, a young girl, and they were riding along their buggy along the beautiful white sands of Carmel Beach and having a picnic. And my grandmother said to him, "Dad, wouldn't this be a wonderful place for a town?" And he said, "You know, it would." And so he partnered with another gentleman, Frank Powers, out of San Francisco, who financed the operation. They purchased the land and laid out the town and started developing it. And at that time, if you were smart enough, you could have bought a beautiful lot in Carmel for $100 with a $5 down payment.
No kidding.
That's right.
And now those houses along the cliffs that look down on the beach are...
A little more.
What are those starting at, price-wise?
Several million just to get the space, probably.
Yeah, probably to get the space, yeah.
And they're talking about a parking space.
Yes,
right, exactly. They're not very big.
It's an amazing place because you can walk along the beach, and there's a lot of freedom on these beaches. They have bonfires on the beach, yet
That's
the
right.
beach is pristine, and there are dogs running, and for some reason, the owners all make their dogs go potty before they get in the car. It's pretty nice, actually.
It really is. It's such a wonderful community. The people are great. The town is great. The restaurants, the lodging, everything, the shopping experience, and just the ambiance of Carmel is so wonderful. And really, we have, over the last decade, really become the center of wine in the Monterey County area.
You know, obviously, that's the reason we're here and what I do want to talk about, although I do want to talk about dinner last night. But we'll come back to that. But this has become an incredibly significant wine destination. And I think what's exciting about this destination is the fact that not only do you have amazing wineries here making really unique styles of wine. And I often say, and I've said it more than a few times on Grape Encounters, that I am not a Pinot lover, but I love the Pinots that come from Monterey County.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there in Russian River, the character of the wines here is very unique. Mm-hmm. Now, who was first to open up a tasting room here in Carmel by the Sea? Was it anybody you know?
Yeah, that was me. That was me. Yeah. I was the guy who started that 10 years ago. I decided that really I wanted a tasting room outside of our property because we have 700 acres up in the mountains above Carmel Valley. A little harder to get to.
I'm not going to ask how much that's worth.
Well, you know, but it's a beautiful, beautiful property, of course, and it's full cattle ranch and winery. But it was a little harder, a little more out of the way for people to get to, and we decided to open a tasting room. And so 10 years ago, I was just thinking, why not in Carmel? Nobody had done so. And so I found a nice piece of property, and it was just brand new being built, which was unusual for Carmel because not a lot of properties had been built in a long time here. And we went and got it permitted through the city council. They welcomed me with open arms and said, come on in. And we opened it. And since then, there have been another 13 wine tasting rooms open in Carmel, my wife's being one of the more recent ones about a year ago. And we have a wonderful program here, a wine walk, where people can come and enjoy all the tasting rooms. Everything is within walking distance. And they're fabulous wineries. They're great people and really quite representative of what is going on in Monterey County, which, as you already alluded to, is really quite unique and very, very diverse. Because remember, Monterey County is the largest grape growing region in the U.S.
I think what might be interesting about this area is the fact that because you clearly have a higher value for real estate here, you know, it's not cheap to get into the wine business here.
Mm-hmm.
So that means means that the proportion of really good wines that come out of this area versus less than exciting wines is going to be, I think, higher because, you know, you don't taste a lot of bad wine from this area.
Right. And you really have people who are dedicated to the farming of the grape as well.
Yeah.
And you have people who are dedicated to the art of the winemaking. You're not going around seeing large chateaus and large edifices.
No, those are the places that the winemakers go home to at night.
Right. We wish. Yeah.
You don't share those exactly. with the rest of the public.
Exactly. Most of us drive the $100 pickup trucks around
yeah,
here.
Yeah, you do the poor me story in the winery about, you know, how little you're making and then go home and
fire up the Ferrari.
The butler right, welcomes yeah. you with a martini, right? Yeah,
exactly. It would be nice, I tell you that. That would be great. But it really is. It's a group of individuals that really are, you know, happy to be on the land and using their hands and doing smaller productions. A lot of people, of course, there are some very large wineries in the area also and very renowned and well known. But the nice thing is you do have this great feeling that everybody is working together to promote the whole area. And the thing that constantly amazes me is how diverse the area is because geographically it's so large. We really have a great variety of different grapes, different wines being made, different styles, and different varietals.
Hold that thought for a second. We are in Carmel by the Sea today with Jack Galante and also talking to Megan Cohn, who is at Dawn's Dream. It's a husband-wife team, but you two are not married. Let's just make that very clear.
Married, but not to each other.
Only in Carmel can you have a beautiful woman like Megan stand in for your wife.
That's true. That's true.
All right. We'll be back from Carmel by the Sea with more Grape Encounters Radio. So don't go anyplace unless you're going to refill your glass.
Wine is fragile, especially good red wine, and it can go south in a matter of hours. And even the very best preservation devices will only buy you a short amount of time, usually a few days or a week at best. Well, sometimes that may be enough, but there are definite limits and risks, and every wine will respond differently. But now there's a surefire way to preserve your wine indefinitely. It's the revolutionary Coravin. The Coravin allows you to take wine out of the bottle without uncorking it. Inert argon gas is injected into the bottle through a small needle inserted into the cork. The gas goes in, the wine comes out, and your pricey Cabernet remains pristine. The Coravin is truly the most significant advancement in wine drinking since the grape. Learn how to get yours at grapeencounters.com. A wine is a terrible thing to waste, so check out the Coravin at grapeencounters.com.
As a grape encounterist, you know how much fun an hour of conversation about wine can be each week. But there's no way we can pack everything into a show. Listeners just like you are turning the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group into an incredible online community where like-minded wine lovers converse, share information, and inspire each other with posts on a variety of interesting topics. If you haven't discovered your community, join in today on Facebook by entering Grape Encounters Radio.
If you have a thirst for wine knowledge, be it trivia or the latest trends, there's a website that's overflowing with content that we've created just for you. It's grapeencounters.com, where you'll find literally hundreds upon hundreds of stories and interviews covering almost every topic imaginable. From the world's most colorful and renowned winemakers to unforgettable wine adventures, there's something for every wine lover at grapeencounters.com. Go ahead, log on, uncork, pour, swirl, and sip.
Giving you permission to do things with wine that you never dreamed of. Your Grape Encounter continues with David Wilson and a little help from his friends.
With you from Carmel by the Sea, and we are actually living Dawn's dream today, and also Jack Galante's dream. He's been dreaming it for a long time. And standing in for Dawn, who is under the weather, is Megan Cohn. Let's talk for a second about where the proceeds go. It's women and children at risk?
Her focus is women and children. Dawn has 5 children of her own with Jack, and so she has a definite passion for giving back to kids, and especially women that are at high risk. Some of her top donations go to Rising Raising International, which supports women in countries that are really, really suffering from poverty. And it allows them to make items that we then also sell here in the tasting room. She also gives back to Voices for Children and other organizations. Her saying is product, money, or time. So if she's participating in a walk for juvenile diabetes, breast cancer, or if she's donating wine or attending events to help raise money.
We always report stories about how good wine is for you, but it's good for other people who aren't even drinking it.
You're absolutely right there. Absolutely. I mean, we all do a lot. The Galante Vineyards, we do an awful lot with different local organizations, and then we focus a lot on veterans. We just did a big event for Vino for Veterans to help the World War II veterans
Vino
fly
for
back.
Veterans. Yeah. I love that. Yeah.
But we send them back to Washington, D.C. to see the War Memorial, and that's what you do. You give back to the community that you love.
But it's not what everybody does. Well, you know, why do you think that winemakers are so generous, Jack?
Because we drink a lot.
It's funny how you start giving things away.
Yeah, exactly.
You have a couple of glasses of wine. take this. No, it really is a great thing. And I can't even imagine how many hundreds of millions of dollars are actually being given away by the wine industry.
I can't even imagine. Yes. I think this is a very, very common theme, absolutely throughout California and throughout other regions as well.
All right. Let's talk about Galante for a second.
Okay? Certainly.
Now, you are a real bona fide cowboy.
Yes, sir.
Wearing a Tommy Bahama shirt.
Yeah, well, you know.
But you see the boots.
Yeah.
So you're proof positive that not all cowboys drink beer and whiskey.
Those are good too. Absolutely.
Those are good too. But you started out as a cowboy more than a winemaker, right?
Yeah. We have a history of being in the cattle business. I've always loved the beef cattle industry and just the whole cowboy life. And boy, 20 years ago, I built the winery, but we planted grapes back in 1983. And we just really enjoy anything that has to do with the land, being outdoors, and the farming of the grapes, and of course, making the end product.
Now, your great-grandfather, would he have been more proud of you for being a cowboy or more proud of you for being a winemaker?
As a matter of fact, probably his foremost would have been proud of my previous job, which was an environmental planner.
Okay.
Because he was one of the first environmental developers in California.
So that was choice D, none of the above.
Right. Yeah. And his wife was a strict Methodist, so alcohol was out of the question.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course, he snuck a nip once in a while, I think.
Yeah, that's why you have wine caves, right?
Right, exactly.
Grandpa, come here in the cave.
Yeah.
So he founded Carmel. You know, and we make jokes about Clint Eastwood, but he really did an awful lot to put Carmel on the map, world map, right?
Well, he's such a name and such an entity. So when he became mayor of Carmel, he really put it even more so on the map. People didn't know as much about it. And of course, he still resides here and is a wonderful part of our community.
And you know Clint, right?
Well, we've met several times.
Does he like your wines?
I hope so. You'd have to ask him.
Make my day with the Cabernet.
Right. That would be nice.
So a lot of times when you go to wine countries, it's really hard to find rooms sometimes. And
yeah,
this whole area has so many nice hotels and bed and breakfasts.
Great.
And there's so many other things that you can do. Bicycle riding, the Monterey Aquarium. There's so much to see. Driving through the neighborhoods and wishing that you were rich like the people of Carmel. It really is a great destination.
It is.
What would you recommend to somebody that's listening to this in another part of the country? Where do you start?
I would say start in Big Sur, drive the coast, taste your wine, and end up at the places like the aquarium, the wharf. And the nice thing is they're all within 10, 20 miles of each other.
And notice she said, go to Big Sur, drive the coast, then taste your wine.
Yes.
Yes. Do not start here, then do Big Sur. Yeah. Start there, work your way down.
Yeah, Big Sur is very windy, but unbelievable. And it's only just a few miles from here, really.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's very
the entire
short
drive
distance,
is beautiful.
It's a beautiful drive. Of course, we have Pebble Beach, we have Monterey, the Arroyo Seco. It's a very fertile area, very beautiful area. It's not a place you can see in a day or two. And I don't think you're going to go hungry. There's over 60 restaurants in a square mile.
All right, I got to say this really quick. La Balena,
yeah,
which means the whale.
Right.
Because when you walk out of there, you feel like a whale. An Italian restaurant that makes the most amazing fried chicken on planet Earth. When you put your fork into the chicken or your knife, the batter just shatters.
It's pretty darn good.
It's so delicious. I have never had better. The bar is set very high in this region, and it's hard to find a bad meal, isn't it, around here?
It really is. People are focused on what they're doing. It's great great stuff, and of course, pretty darn good wines too.
Okay, and last night, by the way, we paired exactly the wrong wine with the chicken, but we didn't care because on Grape Encounters, it's all about breaking the rules.
Oh, you drank the Grand Champion last night.
We drank the Grand Champion last night.
Good, our Galante Grand Champion.
Which, by the way, has this amazing label of a belt buckle because it really brings together the wine and the whole rancher theme.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, that would pair good with anything.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, so if somebody wants to know more about Don's Dream, how can they get the wines and how can they contribute?
The easiest way is online. Our website, donsdreamwinery.com.
Okay, and for Galante.
GalanteVineyards.com is the first way to start. Feel free to call us, 800-GALANTE. We have lots of great events at our tasting room and at our ranch. We are more of the Bordeaux-style wines, the Cabernets. We do the Merlot. We do beautiful Malbec, Petit Syrahs. Our Sauvignon Blanc is outrageous. I know David loves our Sauvignon Blanc.
Oh, my gosh, that Sauvignon Blanc is as good as anything I've ever had.
Oh, thank you, David.
Okay, well, you guys, it's been really great being with you.
Thank you, David.
We're going to finish up the rest of the show, and then I'll be out at the ranch. So get your wildest bull ready. Okay?
I don't know if it can ever be that prepared.
Just get your wildest bull ready so I can take pictures of him.
There you go.
While I'm drinking the Sauvignon Blanc.
Sounds great.
All right. We'll be back with more Grape Encounters. So stay with us.
We like to talk about wine.
This is David Wilson, and I want you to sail with me from Rome to Barcelona on one of the most luxurious cruise ships in the world, the completely reimagined Regent Seven Seas Mariner. Every year, I take listeners on a luxury voyage sure to create unforgettable memories. And next May, from the 10th to the 17th, our itinerary will include some of my favorite places on the planet. And I'll be there to make sure that your travel experience is purely amazing. Imagine visiting incomparable Rome, Florence, Portofino, Provence, and breathtaking Barcelona. The ports will be spectacular, and your elegant suite with a private patio will astound you. Book now and get 2-for-1 fares, free round-trip air, $200 shipboard credit, plus you pay nothing extra for wine, cocktails, shore excursions, even tips are included. I've got a luxury cabin with your name on it.
As a Grape Encounterist, you know how much fun an hour of conversation about wine can be each week. But there's no way we can pack everything into a show. Listeners just like you are turning the Grape Encounters Radio Facebook group into an incredible online community where like-minded wine lovers converse, share information, and inspire each other with posts on a variety of interesting topics. If you haven't discovered your community, join in today on Facebook by entering Grape Encounters Radio.
Nestled between world-class Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo wine countries, the warm and inviting city of Atascadero is the humble heart of the Central Coast. With access to endless wine country adventures, including wine and olive oil tasting tours, artisan farm experiences, food, wine, and cultural events, historic Atascadero's cozy and oh-so-friendly atmosphere make it the perfect home base for Central Coast tourists. Discover more about the heart of the Central Coast at visitatascadero.com.
From the intersection of fermented and demented, Grape Encounters presents What We Heard Through the Grapevine. Today's top news, trends, and stories.
Sports and wine. Sports and wine.
An exciting newscast we have for you today because we get to talk about the biggest wine drinking weekend. This, of course, is the weekend of the big game. And at no time during the year do sports fans consume more wine than during the Super Bowl.
Beer may be the beverage of choice at the Super Bowl.
Not in my house, it isn't.
Of course not. Of course not.
Don't think about beer. Don't think about beer. Don't think about beer.
The biggest weekend is typically the Super Bowl, but this past weekend, the potential blizzard of 2015, as it was threatening to bear down on the Northeast.
I like the words you're using, potential and threatening.
Yes. They turned to wine for comfort.
They did.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A quick glance at my social media feeds was all I needed was to understand the worst storm in the century just meant one thing: time to party. My brother and his family are in Connecticut, and they invited friends over from the neighborhood to invade their wine cellar. And then they were social media posting pictures.
Wait, well, hold on a second. So your brother has a wine cellar, right?
Yep.
And I guess, did they think they were all going to die?
I guess.
And so
like,
he said, it's time to come on over.
Clear out the wine cellar.
It's Armageddon. Come on over.
At one point, they go, anybody know how to build a wine bottle pyramid?
No, seriously?
Yeah.
But, you know what you should have done is you should have told your brother, look, the big storm's coming. Ship the wine over here to be safe.
Yeah. Oh, I should have done that.
Well, Are you serious? No, seriously, this is the funniest thing I've ever heard. Your brother invites all his friends over to just raid the wine cellar because they all think they're going to die.
Because they think we're going to be trapped here for a while, so let's just get drunk.
Well, listen, and let me ask you, you're an East Coast guy. It was the storm that wasn't, right?
Well, in Maine and Rhode Island and some of the like Long Island, it got hit hard, but like Manhattan didn't get much of anything. Boston was okay. I mean, it was just a flurry.
A pittance.
Yes. But as the storm hype grew, so did the need for alcohol, David. The alcohol delivery service Drizly, based in Boston, was slammed. As of 2 p.m. Monday, demand for deliveries in New York City and Boston were up over 475%.
475%.
Post-storm analysis shows Bostonians stocked up on beer, New Yorkers stocked up on wine. So we have the top five products from each city that they were ordering in mass quantities as this storm was growing.
Oh, lay them on me.
Okay, so in Boston, Bud Light, Blue Moon, Absolut Vodka, Angry Orchard Crisp Apple Cider, and Harpoon IPA.
Okay.
In New York, the Pinot Project Pinot Noir, A to Z Pinot Noir, Oyster Bay Sauvignon Blanc, Tito's Handmade Vodka, and Alamos Malbec.
Wow.
Yeah. So New Yorkers are a little more sophisticated.
New Yorkers were drinking Alamos Malbec.
Yeah.
it's made by Catania, which actually makes some really good wines, and that's a very affordable wine. I think, you know, I think it's around $9 to $10.
Wow.
I'm thinking, if I'm facing the Armageddon storm, I'm going to buy much better wine than that. Not that that's a bad wine, but I'm going to blow my wad.
Well, what we don't know is what they had in stock to deliver.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? They may have had large quantities of those things too. So,
and they're all looking out the window, you know, drinking, you know, up mass quantities of wine and other alcohol,
oh, yeah,
going, when's it going to start snowing?
Storm of the century.
Somebody up on the roof with a box of dish detergent, you know, sprinkling it in front of the window.
Drink up.
All right, we're making fun of them. It's not fair. We're out here on the West Coast and not very sympathetic. We just get floods.
I've been there, though, Dave. I've been there as the storm is bearing down. And I saw a lot of my radio friends were like locked in the studios. They were sleeping in the studios so they could get in, and they all brought wine to the studios to drink at night and party. I mean, it's just what you do. It's kind of, I mean, I used to go in and sleep in the studio when the storm was bearing down, and, you know, just a way of life out there.
And you were on the air.
Yeah,
so. Definitely. You know, a funny story, several years ago, I was invited to MC the wedding for a friend of mine in Jamaica. And I was there by myself because at the time I was single, but I had a girlfriend, but she broke up with me a week before. And so I went to this couples resort, and danged if I didn't get there. And it was just me at a couples resort, which isn't a lot of fun to begin with. There are no available people to ask to dance. I will tell you that. But anyway, so I'm there, and the first day I get there, which was 3 days earlier than everybody else because me and the former girlfriend were going to spend some quality time there. Hurricane Dean, a Category 5 hurricane, is now bearing down on Jamaica, and now they're boarding up everything, and we have to go into shelters, right?
Ain't no party like a hurricane.
So
party.
As much as I am the wine guy, I am a wine lover. Wine is always my drink of choice. They had bottles of liquor in your rooms, but we had to go to the, it's not a bomb shelter, but a hurricane shelter,
hurricane,
right?
Shelter.
It doesn't have any windows. And I left the wine behind, and I grabbed the tequila and the vodka. So I'm thinking, I'm surprised that during storms people are sipping wine. I'm going to be gulping the hard stuff.
All right.
That's the only time, you know, that's the only time that I would go for something like that where death is imminent.
Well, death is certainly not imminent this weekend in Arizona where the Super Bowl is being held, but there will be lots of drinking.
Yeah.
I promise you that.
So let's talk about that.
Okay.
The Super Bowl and wine, is there a story there?
Sure. There is.
Okay.
The city of Phoenix sectioned off about 9 blocks for what's being described as like an adult playground, featuring a 100-foot-tall climbing wall in an open alcohol consumption area.
Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay, so they put up a 100-foot climbing wall for people who can drink to their heart's content to climb.
Right, and it's the largest.
And you say nobody's going to die there.
No, no. Well, maybe somebody will die. It's the largest special event liquor license ever granted in downtown Phoenix. And the area is featuring a number of beer and wine gardens for, you know, whoever wants to buy a ticket to get into what they're calling Super Bowl Central.
So do I buy just one ticket and then I can drink to my heart's content? Or?
Well, you have to buy the beer once you or the wine once you get in.
Yeah, don't say the B word when we're doing a wine show, please.
Okay. So, well, you brought it up.
All right. Do they have any estimates on how much wine is going to be there? And will there be some Arizona wine there?
Well, see, I kept looking. And they weren't really touting the wines that much down there. However, I can tell you next year's Super Bowl, number 50, will be in San Francisco. And the Super Bowl committee this week announced that Sonoma County wines will be the official wines for next year's event.
Whoa. Seriously?
Yes.
Are you saying that the Super Bowl committee has dissed Napa wines? I mean, I love Sonoma. Believe me, Sonoma wine's amazing, but it would seem like you would include Napa, maybe?
Well, I guess Sonoma wooed them over.
What about Mendocino County?
Listen,
it's right up there, too.
They're out of luck. They're shut out. Sonoma County vendors will have their own wine lounge within the Fan Village in San Francisco. And instead of a typical four-day event, San Francisco's event will be 8 days, and it's expected to draw 1 million visitors.
If I was a winemaker in Napa, I would shut off all wine flowing to San Francisco indefinitely.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, I would not sell wine to anybody who liked football.
Oh, stop it. So here's what else you need to know, David.
What's that?
This is where we are involved.
Okay.
The wines will be showcased at VIP and media events throughout the week preceding the Super Bowl, which will be held on February 7th, 2016. That includes pouring at exclusive parties on Super Bowl Sunday for up to 2,000 important partners and guests, including Google, Apple, Intel, and I can only assume, David, the entire Grape Encounters radio staff.
I would say that we need to have some kind of a booth there, and we need to broadcast from there.
That'd be awesome.
Well, it wouldn't be. You need to arrange it.
Oh,
okay.
I thought you were raising your hand to do that.
No. We will do that. We will be there. If they want us, we will be there. And if they don't want us, we will be right outside the gate.
Okay.
With the Napa winemakers.
So while we're talking Super Bowl, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you watch the Super Bowl?
Yes.
Okay. When you're watching the Super Bowl, what are you drinking? What are you eating?
Well, first of all, I have been to 8 Super Bowls, okay? Even though I'm not a big football fan by any stretch of the imagination, because I believe if you're going to like something, you know, I think football's complicated and you have to really throw a lot of your life into it. And I can't do this show and be a big football fan. But I would tell you this, that watching the Super Bowl, probably the best wines for Super Bowls, I probably would go white wines as opposed to red wines. Even though I'm a big red wine drinker, I'm probably going Sauvignon Blanc.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know, because it's, you know, it's kind of more
drinkable?
It's less sippable and more drinkable. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. It does.
Like you move through it a little bit faster.
Flow through it.
Yeah, it's kind of more beer-like, actually. Oh, I said the B word. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, it's kind of like the lawn mowing wine. It's like you got a lawnmower beer, you got a lawn mowing wine.
Well, you know, when you get right down to it, yeah, then things like Chenin Blanc, which frankly is very good, and Chablis have gotten very good. So anyway, those kinds of things, a non-oaked Chardonnay, probably.
What do you serve with it? What are you snacking on?
Anything you want. Right now, I'm in this burrata cheese phase of my life.
Ooh.
I love burrata cheese. It's showing up everywhere. Burrata cheese, burrata
awesome.
Cheese. Yeah.
All right. Well, to finalize the news here, we have an update.
Wait a second. Why did you ask me that question?
Because the Super Bowl's this weekend and people want to know what you think.
What I'm going to be eating.
Yeah.
Oh, do they really care?
They do.
You know what?
You're a very important
have
person.
Pretzels with them. With it if you want. By the way, here's a question for you, okay?
Okay.
All right. You know that a lot of celebrities have wineries, right?
I do know that, yeah.
So I'm going to give you a little quiz here. I'm going to name a sports figure, and you're going to tell me whether or not they have a winery.
Oh.
Okay, you ready?
Okay.
All right, Dick Vermeil.
Yes.
Yes, he does, actually.
Former coach of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yes, he has a winery. And get this, okay? His tasting room is in Calistoga.
Oh.
What county is Calistoga?
Sonoma?
No. He's going to be ticked. Okay, how about this? Carmen Policy?
No.
The architect of the San Francisco 49ers football dynasty?
No.
Yes, he has a winery. Guess where it's at?
Napa County.
It's in the Napa Valley. Okay, here's one. O.J. Simpson.
No.
No.
No. Prison wine.
Yeah, prison wine. He's making it out of dirty socks. Okay, how about this one? Drew Bledsoe.
Yes.
How do you know?
I think I've seen it.
Actually, yes. Walla Walla, Washington. Okay, how about Joe Montana?
Joe Montana. I'm going to say he probably has a stake in a winery.
Yeah, he does, actually. actually.
Yeah.
He has a stake in a winery. He partnered with Beringer back in the late 90s and early 2000s to produce Cabernet Sauvignon called Montasia.
Oh.
I think I'm saying that right. Montasia. Anyway, those are just a few. One more. Well, I think I already gave it away by saying, one more. Terry Hogue.
Yes, he definitely.
Yeah, he definitely does. And guess where his winery is at?
Sonoma.
No!
Where's it at?
Paso Robles. How about that? Right here in our own little neighborhood.
Oh, that's
okay.
Great.
Well, anyway, so that's very interesting. Football players, you know how they do that thing where they stomp back and forth in the tires with their feet, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder if you could get one of those football stars to do that in their bare feet, and then people would want to buy that wine because it had the footprints of Joe Montana on it.
Yeah, put the grapes in the tires.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so
all right.
Crush them.
I think this is maybe the silliest news we've ever had.
No, it's not.
Okay, that
here's
was
some serious
week.
Good news.
Okay.
An update on the big wine heist at the French Laundry. Now, you'll remember somebody, Jimmy Delox, stole $300,000 worth of wine, 76 bottles, from the restaurant on Christmas Day. Now, detectives have recovered most of that wine in North Carolina. Now, no word on how many bottles were
North
actually.
Carolina?
Yeah. So everybody thought it was going to be shipped overseas, but they ended up in North Carolina.
But we don't know who stole it just yet.
They've not revealed that or how many bottles were recovered or how they exactly found them. But we do know these wines were so pricey, every bottle had a unique serial number on the label. And the corks and the capsules also had markings visible only through ultraviolet light to prevent counterfeiting.
Wow, amazing. And you know what is even more amazing?
What's that?
As you know, I, along with my wife, own a wine store and tasting room.
Right.
If they came and they stole all the wine from our tasting room, there would be no investigation even close to this. They would use terms like SOL.
How does that make you feel, David?
It makes me feel like installing an even bigger security system.
Maybe if you called this Wilson's Laundry.
Wilson's Laundry. Oh, yeah, that'd go over really good.
That's the news as we see it.
You know what? My dry cleaner actually is happy when Wilson's Laundry arrives. That's about it. Okay, that's going to do it for the news. As Larry said, coming up next, it is Sarah Schneider and Sipping with Sarah, the wine editor from the esteemed Sunset Magazine. So don't go anywhere.
Big, fun, and chatty, with a hint of sarcasm. David Wilson isn't concerned with what you're supposed to do with wine. He's having too much fun figuring out what you can do with wine. This is Grape Encounters Radio.
Do, 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 do. Wine.
Wine is fragile, especially good red wine, and it can go south in a matter of hours. And even the very best preservation devices will only buy you a short amount of time, usually a few days or a week at best. Well, sometimes that may be enough, but there are definite limits and risks, and every wine will respond differently. But now there's a surefire way to preserve your wine indefinitely. It's the revolutionary Coravin. The Coravin allows you to take wine out of the bottle without uncorking it. Inert argon gas is injected into the bottle through a small needle inserted into the cork. The gas goes in, the wine comes out, and your pricey Cabernet remains pristine. The Coravin is truly the most significant advancement in wine drinking since the grape. Learn how to get yours at grapeencounters.com. A wine is a terrible thing to waste, so check out the Coravin at grapeencounters.com. As the host of a wine show based on the Central Coast of California, a lot of visiting friends and listeners ask me for suggestions about places to visit in this neck of the woods. Well, one place that is always on that list is Hammersky Vineyard and Tasting Room, just 15 minutes northwest of Templeton on Vineyard Drive. From the beautiful New England barn to the charming historic farmhouse to the warm and inviting tasting room that sits on a knoll overlooking one of the region's most breathtaking views, Hammersky is a must-visit destination. Hammersky features an outstanding selection of handcrafted wines that are a true reflection of its rare and beautiful setting. Enchanting, sexy, sophisticated, but very approachable. See what I mean online at hammersky.com. Then plan a trip to one of the crown jewels of the Central Coast, Hammersky Vineyards. It deserves to be on your bucket list.
She's earthy, honest, and sipping each week as a service to you. From Sunset Magazine, it's Sarah Schneider. This is Sipping with Sarah on Grape Encounters Radio. I'm running blind.
I am sitting here in the dark with Sarah Schneider.
You're blind already?
How many men would like to be me right now? No, but we're actually sitting in the dark to prove a point, Sarah, which is to talk about tasting wine in the blind. How often do you do that?
Well, I'll tell you honestly, if I'm tasting to really distinguish among a whole lineup of wines to pull out a few that I'm going to recommend, I do it blind. If I'm tasting a little more casually, I kind of like to know who the maker was and where it's from.
So do you ever have any of the editors at Sunset Magazine come and wrap your wine bottles in newspaper or anything like that so you can't see what you're drinking?
I have done it.
You have done that.
Yeah. But our biggest blind tasting here is our international wine competition. And obviously everything is tasted blind for that.
And that's true, I guess, with most wine competitions.
Yes.
But when it comes down to being a consumer, it's a completely different thing. And I actually really appreciate it when I go to friends' houses for dinner or whatever and they pour the wine blind.
You know, I think that's a really unusual thing to do, and it's an interesting idea.
Well, I used to, you know, the first thing I would do when somebody would pour me a glass of wine, I'd say, what are we drinking here? That's what everybody says.
Right,
what are we drinking
right.
here? But the truth is, more and more these days, I will say, don't show me. Part of it is that I just want to guess what it is.
That's fun.
And see how many times I can be wrong.
It is humbling.
Are you surprised at how many times you're wrong?
Well, I used to be, but I'm not surprised anymore because it's just so easy to be wrong.
And you being the wine editor of Sunset Magazine and me being a guy who talks about wine on the radio, everybody wants to stump you.
That's true.
They want to test you.
And I actually don't like that.
I don't like that either.
Because that's not what it's about.
And next week, I'm so going to try to test you.
Oh, stop.
No, because you know what's happening next week?
Tell.
Ian Coble, the star of the movie Som.
I've seen it.
He's a pretty big deal these days.
Yeah.
He was a pretty big deal in that movie. I don't know why he was the star, because he was the only one who failed the test. But he came back and took it again. But he has sent along six of his wines from Som Select. That's his company. And he wants us to taste them in the blind.
That's exciting.
He wants us to kind of take this for a test drive. So we're going to do that.
Does this mean that we need to be guessing what they are, or just
It's our show. I don't think we have to – he has a whole rule book that comes with it, but I don't think we have to necessarily follow his rules.
I never like to follow the rules.
We're not being paid to do this, right?
Right.
We're just going to kind of evaluate the whole thing, because I think it's a great idea. I'm glad he's doing it.
I think it's really fun.
Okay. So let's talk about tasting in the blind for a second. Do you think that most wines taste better in the blind? How's that for a question?
Oh, that's a huge question. I'm going to come back with a big generalization here.
Do you want a drum roll?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. Okay, go ahead.
I think that most inexpensive wines taste better when they're tasted. No, I can't even say that. Can I say this on the air? There's
first
just
time
some
ever
crap out
in,
there.
In the time that we've been together, you did a 180 right in the middle of a sentence.
I was editing myself right on the spot.
This is radio. You can't do that.
Can't do that.
Okay.
Shoot. What I was starting to say is that most inexpensive wines taste better if you don't know that they're inexpensive wines. And a lot of expensive wines taste worse when you're tasting blind because you don't know the price tag. That's a horrible generalization.
Yeah. You want to rethink that?
All I'll say is that there are studies to prove that people like wine better if they think it has a big price tag.
Okay. I'm going to take a stab at this. I was invited to MC an event a couple of years ago that was a fundraiser for the blind. I mean, truly, the blind.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've ever been to one of these, but it's a dinner that is done completely in the dark.
I have not.
Okay. So what they do is they not only go into the, you know, the banquet room at the hotel where the event is done and shut the blinds and turn out the lights, they actually, even something as simple as LED light on a coffee pot, they will tape black tape over.
Wow.
Any even hint of light coming into the room so you can't see anything. And the interesting thing about it is that the servers are blind.
Wow.
There actually are folks that have lost their sight. And it was very interesting to me how much more I enjoyed the food that night.
Wow, that's quite a story.
Because I'm feeling around on the plate. I'm understanding the texture. I'm paying attention to the smell. I'm, you know, not sure necessarily what I'm eating, so I'm paying closer attention to the nuances. In a nutshell, not taking the food for granted.
That's a very good point.
And so you discover more things that you like about something when you do that, I think. You make discoveries. Like wine, I think we tend to take for granted. We know there are certain things that are going to be true of every glass of wine that we drink. It's going to have alcohol in it. It's going to have some sort of fruit, be it mild or pronounced. There's just those properties that are common to all wines, I think, that are sort of the baseline for the wine.
Right. But when you have the label visible and wrapped around it, you have expectations as to how you're going to react to those factors. And take the label off, you don't have any expectations to go on.
If somebody pours you, Sarah, a glass of Cabernet, and they say, here's Sarah Schneider, here's a glass of Cabernet Sauvignon, and you drink it, you've prepared your palate for Cabernet. Have you? Oh, here's a great question. Have you ever picked up a glass of something that you thought was something else and tasted it, and it wasn't what you thought it was? Like, you thought it was lemonade and was grapefruit juice instead or something like
that. Sure.
Yeah. And like you get this mouth shock.
Yeah.
Ah!
Yeah.
What happened?
Because you have a taste memory of what you thought that was going to be.
But if you knew it was grapefruit juice, you wouldn't be shocked by it, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think tasting in the blind probably does more good than harm.
I think so. I absolutely do. You can just react objectively to all of those factors that you just named that are in the wine, that alcohol, those tannins.
I just think so many people don't do it because, first of all, we Americans are ridiculously label conscious, and it's all about how much it costs, and wow, that's an $80 bottle of wine that I'm serving, and you know what? Get over your bad self and realize that people will actually respect you more for making a $10 discovery than throwing a $300 bottle of wine on the table and saying, wow, isn't it good? Because my answer to that is, it better be.
Yeah, that's not hard to find a good $300 bottle of wine.
If I buy a $200 pair of jeans, I expect them to last, right?
Absolutely.
All right, so are you going to be game next week? We'll play the Ian Cobble game.
I'm looking forward to it.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Sipping with Sarah on Grape Encounters Radio. We will see you back here for the next edition of Sip with Sarah this same time next week, but put your blinders on, will you?
You never know what part of the country or the world the Grape Encounters microphones will take you to. Don't miss a single experience. Your Grape Encounter isn't over. We're just taking a breather until next week's edition.